So we're going to move on now to the next part of the day. So we're going to have a section now on rainbow refugees, which actually was initially proposed as a topic for discussion today by one of the RNA members from New South Wales, Brett Hadfield, who unfortunately has now moved on to the UK, so can't be with us today. But I'd like to hand over to Jana Palmer from True, who's going to give an overview of the subject, and then we're going to move on to our little panel discussion. All right, so thank you very much, Jana.
Thanks, Cheryl. Can you hear me at the back, Alex? So can you just put your hand up at some point if you can't hear me? And I can always revert to the microphone, but it's a bit far away from you all. So thank you for having me here today. Before starting, I'd just like to acknowledge that we're on Aboriginal land, the Turrbal and Jagera people, and acknowledge any elders past, present, and emerging. I also just want to give thanks to the LGBTIQ plus community before this time for all the work that they've done, which means that we can sit here and talk about this now. So can you tell me what flags these ones are? Any volunteers? Yep. The middle one is the trans or transgender flag. Yep. Other two? Intersex, yeah. So that one that people might be a lot less familiar with is intersex. And if that's a new word for you, we're going to get to that one. And a lot of people have seen, I guess, the rainbow flag, which is the pride flag. I'm from True, or True Relationships and Reproductive Health. I think most of you know it, but if not, it used to be called Family Planning Queensland, which most people know. And if you haven't looked at our website, I just recommend it. It's got lots of resources. We have clinics in different spaces in Queensland, and we do a lot of education in different spaces. My very small team is a culturally responsive health team. So it's migrant and refugee, sexual and reproductive health, also including international students and travelers as well. And maybe something of use is if you're working with interpreters, we have face-to-face training and webinars for interpreters on reproductive and sexual health, and we look a lot about values and beliefs and just basic health literacy in that space. So if you want to recommend anyone, that training's free, and we have a waiting list and good feedback from that, so just encourage you if you're working with interpreters to, if they need some education in that area, that we'd really love to have them along. So there's a lot of language in this space. So I'm going to use LGBTIQ plus today because it's the most recognised in Australia, but also just recognising that you might see different language in academic research, and internationally you might see different language as well. And I don't want to overwhelm you with all the languages, just recognising that it is a complex space in terms of language, and then we'll get to, I guess, culturally or linguistically how, but I guess additional challenges to that. But just acknowledging it's quite a lot of words, quite a lot of new language for some people. And I won't go into policy because of time, but that our work is based on this policy. And if you're interested, you can always contact me and just ask for any information on that. So for some of you, this is going to be really familiar. So I guess just bear with that, but you might know this knowledge already, you might know this already, and for some of you, parts of it will be quite new, but we just want to cover it so that everyone's, I guess, on the same page. So it is complex, and that sometimes is a barrier to understanding a bit more, and that's okay, we'll get there. So we want to talk about how in that LGBTIQ plus space, there's three main concepts or areas. So we've got assigned sex, and a lot of people will just call that sex, but we say assigned sex because at birth, that's what's identified. And gender, which is different to sex, and we'll get into that. And sexuality, which I guess a more specific word might be orientation, because sexuality is actually all the different things about our sexuality. So we're more talking about orientation. And a key message, I guess, from this is that they're three distinct different areas and concepts. They might be interrelated for people, but they're actually three different things. Because sometimes they can get a bit muddled and confused. So starting at sex assigned at birth, and I did think that nurses would know a lot about intersex, but I keep finding out that they don't necessarily have training in this area. So for those of you who know a lot about it, that's great, but I keep getting feedback that there's also some gaps in knowledge around this. So someone in the audience, would someone be able to say what intersex means? Putting you on the spot. Was that
intersex is a physical anomaly, perhaps, that occurs, that can cause gender
Yeah, and I just encourage to use sex rather than gender. So sex meaning biological. So it's a biological variation. So it could be around genitalia. It could be chromosomal. So it's about biology, or it could be hormonal. So there are 30 to 40 different kinds of intersex variations, and some will have a big impact maybe on the body, and some people won't even know that they have an intersex variation. Most intersex bodies are healthy bodies. One thing that might be impacted is the ability to conceive or have children. But generally speaking, they're healthy bodies. There's also a myth that intersex might mean a physical difference in genitalia. That's actually not the most common types of intersex variations. It could be around puberty, that hormones aren't, kicking in, and the secondary sex characteristics aren't developing. Or again, it could be when trying to conceive that people realise that there might be an issue with that and they have an intersex variation. So importantly, it's a biological variation. And this is the definition of intersex. So intersex people are born with physical sex characteristics that don't fit medical and social norms for male and female bodies. Importantly, most people with intersex variation still identify as women or men, because they're actually brought up as women or men or boys or girls. So it's very different to trans or transgender. So it's a biological variation. And culturally, there's such diversity in how people have interpreted what intersex means all around the world. So in some countries, intersex babies may be killed historically as well. And in some cultures, people might be venerated or celebrated because of that difference. So it's really quite diverse. In Australia and in a lot of Western countries, there's a lot of human rights movement to, stop surgery at birth or in childhood to make someone's body conform to male or female, because most adults, over 90% of adults that have had that intervention, have regretted that later in life. So I guess just an awareness that people with intersex variations may have had medical intervention that they did not want, and that could cause issues for them. So that's intersex, and I encourage you to keep looking at it. We don't have a lot of time today, otherwise we could talk a lot more about it. So gonna throw it back out to you, how would intersex and then trans or transgender be different to each other? Don't be shy. The safe space, and no one's going to be upset if you get it wrong.
Well, on the outside, people cross dress. You know, that's what people prefer, to dress differently, maybe to the gender that they were born. So if that's the outside physical display of how they feel about themselves.
So part of gender might be your expression, how you wear and how you move in the world, I guess. So absolutely, part of gender is about expression. So a big difference is that gender is a very cultural concept, and it's about identity. So expression, as you were saying, identity is just how you feel, like I just know that I am a woman. And roles, so there are gender roles in every culture, whether they're more traditional or not, they exist. But it's all impacted by different things: culture, law, and the other law, media, friends, family, values, religion, stereotypes. So gender is really impacted by culture, and you can see all around the world that we do gender differently, and there might be some similarities, but there's a lot of difference as well. So if someone, what is cisgender? Are people familiar with cisgender as a term? Not so much. So cisgender is just when your identity aligns with the sex you were assigned at birth. So most people in the room are going to be cisgender, because that most people identify in the same way that they're assigned at birth. So assigned female at birth, identifying as a woman, you're cisgender. Trans, non-binary, and gender diverse are all just terms that describe identities and people whose gender does not align with what they were assigned at birth. And that comes from Latin, so cis means on the same side and trans means on the other side. And it can be really powerful knowing that word cisgender, because I've heard people being described in the past as transgender people and normal people. And that can be really alienating and not feel really good. So there's actually ways that we can use to describe it that doesn't other people. And all around the world, this is different. So in South Asia, there is, I guess, a third gender, or how we in Australia would interpret that is trans women. So people who are assigned male at birth but live as women and identify as women. In Native America, North America, there are three or four different genders where, again, people, I guess their identity is different to what they were assigned biologically at birth. In Indonesia, there's a culture that has five different genders recognized in their culture. A lot of people always say, what do you mean, what five genders? So in, again, a Western term, this would be cisgender women, cisgender men, transgender women, transgender men, and an androgynous gender as well. And Italy, just historically, because that's my culture, has also had, I guess, a different gender where people assigned male were more feminine, lived in women's roles. So a lot of places might historically have a different gender that's changed over time. And gender, concept of gender does change over time. And Mexico also. And Pacific Islands, so Fafafine is a really common identity, which again is people assigned male at birth, but living as girls or women and involved in traditional like women's roles. And same in Australia, sister girls in some Aboriginal communities before colonization was a recognized gender, again of men, people assigned male at birth, sorry, who are living as women and involved in women's business and women's stories. And brother boys is perhaps a more modern kind of term, but for people assigned female and identifying as men that are also Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander. So just pointing that all around the world we actually see gender differently, and some people coming to Australia will find how we see gender liberating, and some people coming will find it really restrictive because it's actually really different to their culture. So just, I guess, keeping in mind, we all do gender differently. And people might not use the word trans. I've met Fafafine who don't consider themselves trans. They consider themselves women. But they're Fafafine. So language can be complex, and it's very personal how people might use language. So we can learn a lot about language today, which helps our work, but ultimately, who are the people we're working with, and what do they use and what do they mean by that? And then we have sexuality or orientation. So you may have noticed in the middle, we're always starting with, in Australian, I guess, dominant culture, what is considered to be the norm. And sexual orientation is behaviour, so who people are having relationships with and sexual activity with. It's about identity, so again, those words like, I identify in this way, so where language is important. And attraction, so who people feel attracted to. And some of the identities people might have is lesbian, gay, bisexual, queer, and there are many other ones as well. They're just the more common ones. And I think an important part here is recognizing that, say, identity and behavior can be really different. So you can have a woman that says, that identifies as a lesbian, that has sex with men. You can have a man that identifies as heterosexual, that has sex with other men. So that identity can be really important to people and it can give them strength, but it doesn't always tell us, I guess, things that we may need to know if we're doing a sexual health assessment or something like that. So just recognizing that identity and behavior don't actually always have to match for people. Any other words that people have heard that they were confused or wondering what that actually meant? Like, oh, I've heard this other word and I didn't know what that means. I guess another little note on queer is that that word has been reclaimed by a lot of queer people and queer community, but some people might still find that offensive. When we work with older population or people that live more rurally, that word might still have stigma for them. So just to be, I guess, careful and mindful that we're using the language that they're using with us. So I guess we talk about these to just explain that there's heteronormativity and cisnormativity. So in our culture, it's just assumed that people will not have an intersex variation, will not be transgender, and will not be gay, lesbian, bisexual, queer. But so it's about how we then create spaces that don't assume these things so that people can actually talk to us about this issue. We're not just making an assumption based on, I guess, dominant culture and what might be more common. So I guess also LGBTIQ plus terminology could be really affirming for some people, or it could be really confusing for people, particularly whose language is, whose first language is not English. It may or may not be used, and it may or may not be understood. So there could be cultural terms. So takatapu is a Maori term. So there might be cultural terms that are important to people that might make more sense. And the main thing is like asking and talking about it, what's more comfortable for someone. Often we will also just say those words. People will often know lesbian and gay, maybe. So rather than saying an acronym like that, we can always just say those words too, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, if people were not sure if they'll understand. So I guess all around the world there can be challenges for people of refugee experience that are LGBTIQ+. So there's discrimination, violence, correctional rape for particularly lesbian women to make them straight is something that does happen, torture and murder, alienation and violence from friends and family, forced marriage, and just accessing basic social and economic rights, and articulating needs. And this is a really big issue where people have had to prove that they're gay, for example, for their claim to be processed, and that can be really difficult for people to do. And sometimes, again, if that you don't have to have a relationship to be gay. So that is really tricky internationally. And hasn't been updated in the last year, although Australia would be dark green because that means that there's legal equality in terms of marriage and other things. But this just highlights that in many countries, homosexuality is criminalized, and in some countries there is the death penalty. And so people may really struggle to talk about this if they've had this kind of experience in the past. And we really need to prove that a space is safe, because without showing that a space is safe, there are just so many barriers to actually talking to someone about it if you've faced this discrimination or fear in the past. I guess it's just that the impacts of homophobia and transphobia, we also really want to say it's not that being gay or trans is going to impact your mental health in a negative way. It's the discrimination and exclusion that people face because of that. So whilst, like suicide, for example, nearly half of young people who identify as trans in Australia have attempted suicide. That is a really huge number. However, when they have supportive family, schools and structures, that number is very equivalent to cisgender or just regular population. So we really want to stress that this is not because of people's identities, but because of the experiences they have, because of that and the exclusion. So there are a lot of potential issues that people may be facing, and particularly if you're linked to a cultural community, that might be even greater if you're really afraid that your cultural community within Australia, who might be your source of support, won't accept you. So there can be a lot of fear of disclosure. Just for time, I'm going to move on. So we talk a lot about cultural safety. So that's an environment where people feel safe, included, and valued, and where identity is considered a source of strength. And it takes trust, and it takes relationships, and it takes time. But I think that one thing nurses are really good at is these things. And a really important thing is just not to make assumptions about people's identity, their culture, or their experiences. So even though I've kind of given you some information, that doesn't apply to everyone, but we're not making those assumptions. And creating client safety is a clear demonstration that a service is aware of and can address the particular needs of refugee and newly arrived people who identify as LGBTIQ+, or who may be questioning their sexual feelings or gender identity. This support should not rely on individual clients disclosing their sexuality or gender identity. So it's like how we have to be proactive about it and not just wait for people to tell us. So some questions, I guess, to ask, and if you want, I can always send this around later if people find that helpful. So are staff knowledgeable and supportive? And that's not just you, but like more broadly, the staff that you work with. Does the client know that your organisation or institutions and policy that protect them from discrimination? It's actually really powerful. When people know that they're protected from discrimination, it does make a difference. Do your resources reflect multicultural LGBTIQ+ bodies, genders, sexualities and identities? So are our images and posters and websites and forms inclusive? Forms also capture things like that beyond male-female. Forms need to capture a bit more than that. Also recognising some people might struggle to put that on a form, so there also needs to be other opportunity to talk about it that's not like this box that people need to tick or fill in when they don't know what, or they might have a family member with them or an interpreter and not feel comfortable. So there need to be a few different ways. Do they have supportive relationships? And again, this is really key in supporting people. And if they don't within their family or their community, how can we, I guess, facilitate opportunities for them to meet other people, to share identity and experience? And that is a really big protective factor for people. And for some people, this could be online as well, this connection to community. But I think that, like Alphaz can talk a bit later about, there are other ways as well. So share resources, information with colleagues. This is really important. Your services might be really culturally competent or aware, but a lot of LGBTIQ+ services are not. And I think that a lot of really trying to become more, but whenever you have opportunities, is there potential for collaboration where you help each other out, where they can be more competent in working with clients that are from refugee backgrounds? So work with families and communities if possible, and respect people's privacy. So in Australia and a lot of Western culture, there's a big, I guess, it's often about like be out and proud and queer, and it's like fine to be who you are, but that's not going to be the same feeling for everyone, and they may need to not actually have that. They may need to keep confidentiality, or they may just not be ready yet. So just respecting where people are in their journey. Support inclusion and challenge discriminatory behaviours. Always refer to people by their name and pronouns. So pronouns are he, she, they. So asking how someone wants to be referred as is really important. also just on a tricky note, some languages don't have he, she, they just have they, which is gender neutral. So just being like Mandarin just has they. So for some people that's an odd concept anyway, that we would have he, she, and they. But this is very powerful, and one of the easiest ways that you can affirm someone's identity is actually using their pronoun and name, if it's perhaps even different to like legal documentation. We all make mistakes, it's okay. It's just about all, how do we like quickly apologize for that and move on and do better? Don't be afraid of making mistakes. We all do. It's just continuing to learn. We'll never kind of know how to act in every situation. And also identity might not be in conflict and can be a source of strength. So I've also met a lot of people from refugee and migrant background where their families have been amazingly accepting and supportive. And so sometimes it's not useful to assume that people won't have that support. For some people it's taken a bit of time, but that can be the same for any individual and family. I guess these are just some referral pathways and connections that are LGBTIQ plus. They're not specifically multicultural though. So, you know, I have met, say, you know, a young person who didn't feel comfortable going to this service because their culture and their experience wasn't represented in the staff, in the young people, in the language of that service. So just recognizing that it still might be a really hard thing for people to access these services, and what can we do? And we do education with these services too, but I guess what can we do to make that a more accessible space, and what resources can you share on cultural safety or humility or competence that might help these services? Whoops. And these are some multicultural LGBTIQ plus resources. So that's an Australian-wide one, but you can often find links to other groups, which is great. Ethnic LGBT is the main person is based near Brisbane, so, and they have events and different things and just people's stories online, which is really nice. And sometimes it's just about hearing the story of someone else that will make you feel a lot better and safer and connected. Rainbow Hub, I realise that we're talking about people from refugee background, but it is for international students, just in case you come across someone that might have both of those experiences. And Rainbow Friends is also a new group that maybe you'll touch on. But again, just Brisbane specific, unfortunately. And the bottom two resources are translated LGBTIQ plus safe space. So it's in lots of different languages from Oram Refugee. And I think Meryl may have sent it out before. So that's a really good resource as well. So I think that's my time, isn't it? So, and I'm really looking forward to hearing more from both of you. And I can be contacted on this. I will also send this through. So if you have any questions, I'm really happy to be contacted about that as well. But